Team of the Executive Committee on COGTA.
My name is George Mtemunye. I am deployed to chair this committee due to the fact that the actual chair is absent, is off sick, and I'm only acting in his place, Honorable Mohapi. The purpose of the meeting today is to receive a briefing on the APP and the budget by COGTA. I don't know how much time do you want Deputy Mr. Nelan Babela, but I think at most 1.5 hours for everything that you do, so that members can be able to interact with your presentation. We shall then take the following approach. We shall allow you to do the presentation in its entirety, and members shall be making notes, and then we shall be posing questions to yourselves and the entourage. But then we will want to take a quick round of introduction. We'll start with members, then we'll go to your side, Deputy Minister Babela, and then can I start on my right with members? You can start.
Good morning, Chair, and morning, Honourable Members. I'm Ninao Anyosile, Chair, COGTA, Eastern Cape.
Thank you, Chairperson. Morning, Deputy Ministers and officials, and my colleagues. My name is Toby Sowan. I'm a permanent delegate of the Eastern Cape in the NSOP.
You are not very audible, Honourable Wana. You are really not very audible. I'm not sure if everybody heard you, but if you can speak aloud, please.
My name is Tabu Sowana, a permanent delegate from the Eastern Cape International Council of Provinces.
Thank you.
Morning, everyone. My name is James Tetra, a permanent delegate from KwaZulu-Natal and the whip of the committee. Thank you.
Morning, the two deputy ministers, and morning, everybody, and morning, the honorable members. My name is Gladys Oliphant. I am a permanent delegate of this committee, and I'm from Northern Cape.
Morning, Deputy Ministers, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Bronwyn Engelbrecht, representing Gauteng.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Morgan Chetty, representing KZN.
Good morning.
Good morning, Deputy Ministers, officials. My name is Dumisani Kimbi, a permanent delegate from the Western Cape. A member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Ministers. Over to you. I don't know how you want to approach it.
Yeah. Maybe we should also favour the committee with an introduction both of ourselves and what you term our entourage, our extensive entourage. My name is Andries Nel, Deputy Minister of COGTA, responsible for provincial and local government. But as we work with a team, I am also from time to time actively involved in traditional affairs matters.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Ovid Babela. I'm the Deputy Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, responsible for traditional affairs, but continuously engaged in local government matters from time to time. But also to thank you for the condolences messages that you have passed over since the bereavement, starting January until now. So it's my first time since that I'm seeing you, since I saw you last year. So, but thank you very much, because I lost my mother, I lost my wife in a short of 28 days apart from each other. But thank you very much for all those things. I was not absent, but I had to take leave of absence. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I think we would also up front like to convey the apologies of Minister Mkhize, who's engaged with other very pressing matters. There's also an apology from the Director General of the Department of Cooperative Governance, who is on, who's not well. He will be represented here today by Mr. Tozi Faba, who will introduce himself presently.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members, honourable TMs. My name is Tozi Faba. I'm the acting director general of DCOC. Thank you.
Chairperson, honourable members, deputy ministers, Marshal Teddy Fofa, Director General of Traditional Affairs. Thank you.
I don't know how we're going to go about. I don't know your hierarchy, how does it go? But I would have relied on you to introduce maybe the people who are going to be playing roles here and there.
No, Chairperson, if there is one thing that members of the public service understand very well, it's hierarchy. I think they'll do it without being directed.
Morning, Chair. Morning, honourable members. My name is Ntandazo Vimba. I'm the acting chief executive officer of MISA.
Some of us need to be educated. Let's avoid acronyms and say in full.
Thanks, Chair. I'm the acting chief of Municipal Infrastructure Support Agent.
Thank you.
Morning, honourable Chair, honourable members, honourable DM. My name is Sezagana Mbembe, and I'm the chief financial officer from the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agent.
Thank you.
Good morning, honourable Chairperson and members. My name is Matsuwane Aphane, CFO, Department of Traditional Affairs.
Thank you.
Morning, Chairperson, honourable members. I'm Shoki Mohaladi, the Chief Director in the Office of the Director General.
Thank you.
Morning, honourable Chairperson, honourable members, honourable Deputy Ministers. My name is Tobani Mateza. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Minister.
Good morning, Kikot Mohajani, responsible for parliamentary and cabinet support in the Department of Traditional Affairs. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Gigi
Bosnell
from the Office of the Director.
Into the record, please.
Sorry. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Gigi Bosnell from the Office of the Director General, Department of Cooperative Governance.
Good morning, honourable members, Deputy Minister Nell, Deputy Minister Mapela, DG Dipofa, and colleagues. My name is Munapule George Tisho. I'm responsible for the Community Work Programme.
Next, please.
Good morning, honourable members. Good morning, Deputy Ministers and colleagues. My name is Shiso Ngoba from the Ministry.
You're not audible, Chief.
My name is Fiso Ngoba, Minister of Culture.
Minister of Culture.
Ministry.
Morning, Deputy Ministers and Managers. My name is Fiso Ngoba from Ministry Office.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, members, DMs. I'm Dorothy Snyman, Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Thank you.
Morning, Chairperson, honorable members, deputy ministers. My name is Teboho Motlasuping. I'm responsible for the branch called Institutional Development at the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Thank you.
I'm originally from Northwest.
We have a Mr. Shuping here. Yeah. Do you relate to him by any chance?
He's my brother.
He's your brother?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members, DMs, and colleagues. My name is Maphaka Tau. I'm head of the National Disaster Management Center. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, DM and your team. At this point, can I hand over to the Secretary of the Committee to record the apologies, please?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in terms of our official record, we received two apologies from Honorable Mohapi and Honorable Mokwena. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Secretary. I think the apologies are noted. Any issues with the apologies? None. Thank you. Deputy Minister Bapela and Nell, I'm now going to hand over to you. We are all in your hands as to how do you want to handle the presentations.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Minister.
Just a minute, Deputy.
Did we adopt the proceedings, the agenda of the day, Chair?
We did not, and we do not have an item on adoption of the agenda, and that is deliberate, because the sole purpose of this meeting is to deal with the briefing on the APP and the budget. That's the sole purpose. It is deliberate. Are we fine, Honorable Oliphant? Thank you. DM?
Chairperson, Honorable Member, thank you very much. We would propose that Deputy Minister Bapela and I would make a brief opening statement, and that we would then do presentations starting with cooperative governance, then traditional affairs, and then the municipal support municipal infrastructure support agency. We have asked the officials to be focused, but not to do injustice to the detail of the presentations. So we would really aim to be finished presenting by 11:30, so that members of the committee have enough time to engage us with questions and discussion. So if that's agreeable, Chairperson, then we would just like to start by thanking you for the opportunity to interact with the Select Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs and a variety of other matters. I believe you deal with public service and also with social development. For us, it's always a very special occasion to engage with the NCOP, because we are a department of cooperative governance and traditional affairs. So the whole question of intergovernmental relations is very, very central to our mandate. And it accords very well with the core mandate of the NCOP, which is also crucial to our intergovernmental relations system, giving voice to the provinces within the national legislative process. So we feel a very, very strong affinity to the NCOP and its work, and we would also just like to take the opportunity to reiterate our congratulations to the NCOP working with COGTA and SALGA for the organization of your very, very successful Local Government Week that was held recently. More particularly, the fact that the Local Government Week touched upon the crucial areas of spatial transformation and also support to municipalities. Now, both of those areas are top of COGTA's agenda. Members might be aware that that President Ramaphosa, in his State of the Nation address, indicated that he would be visiting government departments and having one-on-one engagements with those departments. As COGTA, we were very fortunate that after the President visited DIRCO, the next stop was visiting COGTA. And the President used some very, very powerful language in his engagement with COGTA. I mean, he referred to COGTA as an engine of government. He also referred to it as a glue between the people and government. The two areas that he highlighted, or the three areas rather that he highlighted, were firstly the need for us vigorously to support municipalities to get them to do the basics, to get the basics right. Secondly, he put a lot of emphasis on the need for us to reverse apartheid spatial patterns and to manage urbanization in ways that contribute to the growing of our economy and to the creation of jobs for the millions of South Africans who are unemployed. Third area that he emphasized is for us to ensure that there are harmonious relationships between municipalities and tradition leaders, and that we also support the tradition leaders to play a stronger developmental role, and in that context referred specifically to promoting the agrarian revolution, which I'm sure that Deputy Minister Bapela will also speak more about. So it's in that context that we come to brief you on our annual performance plan, our financials for the 2018-19 financial year, and the colleagues who have already introduced themselves will brief you more fully on that. As we said, COCTA continues to focus on carrying out the mandate that's set out in the Constitution to turn local government into a sector that responds to the needs of our people through an implementation, a vigorous implementation of the Back to Basics program. The medium-term strategic, or the medium-term expenditure framework cycle coincides with the end of this electoral mandate term, which stretched from 2014 until 2019. In the past financial year, the performance of cooperative governance was, I think, at 71% of the planned targets. In the 2018-19 APP, we ensure that there's an alignment of our goals and objectives to the medium-term strategic framework. Outcome 9 and others. Some of the core areas that we just want to highlight is firstly that we continue to work with provinces and sector departments to support distressed municipalities through the Back to Basics program. We just want to say under that point why we welcome the engagement with the NCOP is that there's a very strong feeling that COCTA should also be turning more of its attention to the functioning of provinces. And that's a clear area where we need to work in partnership with the NCOP. I think some of the recent events that we've seen in the Northwest underscore the importance of national government also focusing more on the functionality of provinces. Also, provinces are at the forefront of supporting and monitoring local government. One of the key challenges that we face with Back to Basics is that there's uneven capacity in provincial COCTA departments. And that's something that we've put very strongly on the agenda of our MINMEC, and it's another area of partnership between ourselves and the NCOP. Second point that we want to raise is that in order to ensure that cities and towns are more inclusive, resource-efficient, and good places to live, as envisaged in the NDP, we are focused on the restructuring of the municipal space economy through the implementation of the Integrated Urban Development Framework, a very, very important area of work, reversing those apartheid spatial patterns, ensuring that people don't live far from work, social, governmental services, etc. Third point is that as part of improving the financial health of municipalities, we've developed a national framework on regional economic development and planning. Fourth point that we want to highlight is that the whole question of municipal of debt owed both to municipalities and by municipalities, I mean, has reached a national crisis point almost. But 32 billion rand is owed by municipalities to bulk service providers. 16 billion rand to Eskom for electricity and the remainder to water boards for water. It demands both enhancing the revenue generation capacity of municipalities, the improvement of things like billing systems, the ability to collect that revenue, but at the same time, also encouraging a culture of payment for basic services. So there we are supporting municipalities to develop municipal-specific revenue plans and ensure that they comply with rating aspects also of the Municipal Property Rights Act. There's an interministerial task team dealing with the ESCOM and Water Board debt. Fifth point that we want to make is that the whole question of establishing ward committees is absolutely vital to ensuring that there's a sound interface between citizens and government. And that especially in those municipalities where there are hung or coalition governments, there's been instability, and that has prevented the establishment of ward committees there. It's something that we're giving attention to. We're also working very hard to ensure that those ward committees not only exist, but that they are active and that they have ward operational plans. Sixth point is that the issue of corruption is one of the major issues that concerns South Africans and that also impacts negatively on service delivery. And therefore, we have developed and are implementing a anti-corruption strategy. I think the colleagues will also talk about our partnership with law enforcement agencies, the hundreds of cases that are with the Hawks. They'll also talk about the forensic investigations that have been conducted in municipalities that we have centralized nationally and are studying those reports and routing them to either the Hawks, the Asset Forfeiture Unit, or the Special Investigating Unit. Colleagues will also talk about the regulations that we've put in place to ensure that the staff that are recruited in our municipalities comply with the law insofar as qualifications, experience is concerned, but also that the processes of appointment that are followed are sound. They'll also talk about the databases that have been established where people who've been found guilty of misconduct get put on databases and are effectively barred from being employed anywhere in local government as part of our broad anti-corruption thrust. The eighth point that we want to make is that through the municipal infrastructure grant, we continue to ensure that municipalities are monitored for compliance with DORA and to use the grant for intended purposes. I think National Treasury has recently reported on some quite significant under-expenditure of infrastructure grants. I'm sure that MISA will also be talking to that. The ninth point is that over the MTF period, there's been an increase in the local government equitable share. We hope that this will go at least some way to turning around the state of affairs in municipalities. The tenth point we wish to highlight is the question of unemployment. Is a burning national issue. The three things that concern South Africans the most are unemployment, crime, and corruption. As part of COCTA's intervention in the quest to deal with the question of unemployment, we have been entrusted with the implementation of the Community Work Program. That program has exceeded its target for the year, and we've created 259,000 work opportunities. I'm sure that Mr. Stisho would be able to add on that. Regrettably, the budgetary allocations are constraining us from achieving the 1 million target that we had set, and that's maybe something also to go into in the discussion. I think lastly, to move towards conclusion, we just want to highlight the excellent work that's been done by our National Disaster Management Center, both in dealing and coordinating government initiatives around the question of drought. I think we're all aware that a national state of disaster has been declared, that over 3 billion rand has been allocated and spent on integrated measures to manage the effects of the drought. And I'm sure that Dr. Tao would be able to amplify on any questions that members might have. Also, that there's a very strong linkage between the work of the Disaster Management Center and of our Integrated Urban Development Framework to develop cities and towns and also to help informal settlements to be more disaster resilient. There have been some very terrible incidents in the recent while. Also to say on the question of supporting distressed and dysfunctional municipalities, I think it's an issue that that received extensive discussion, attention during the local government week. I think the point was made very, very strongly, which we concur with, that we need as a general approach first and foremost to be supporting municipalities. And to be supporting those municipalities in terms of Section 154 of the Constitution through our Back to Basics program before we just jump in and intervene in terms of Section 139. It's a point very well taken. And I think we would want to engage the committee further on that. Certainly there is a place for Section 139 interventions. But that should ideally come once we've engaged in a process of consistent support and engagement. So that when we do then intervene in terms of Section 139, the effectiveness of those interventions is also much more and more sustainable. I think the last two points would just be around the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agent. Support is being provided we plan to support at least 81 municipalities in the 18-19 financial year. That support would include things like developing infrastructure and town and regional planning, regional sector plans, water conservation and demand management, feasibility studies for the alignment of reticulation and bulk infrastructure water services, and the setting up of the framework contracts for water and wastewater management, etc. I think very good work has also been done in terms of recruiting young graduates, having mentorship and internship programs, that we both develop the youth of our country, address problems of unemployment, and at the same time support our municipalities. The Minister Mkhize, in his budget address to the NA, also spoke extensively about the formation of district support teams that will be deployed to the various districts to support those local municipalities that have capacity challenges, amongst others, also to spend their MIG money. And very lastly, Chair, before I hand over to Deputy Minister Bapela, just to emphasize once again the importance of the interconnection between our Back to Basics program of getting municipalities to be functional and our Integrated Urban Development Framework to manage urbanization and to reverse apartheid spatial patterns. And to thank the NCOP again for focusing on both of those areas during the past local government week. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Mchimunye, and all honorable members of the Select Committee in the NCOP. Mine will be very brief, but just to then allude to the issues of the 2018-2019 annual performance plans outlines as already presented to Parliament, including the 2015-2020 revised strategic plan, which was also presented to Parliament, that the tools then should be taken into cognizance. The work of the Department, obviously, of Traditional Affairs is guided by five pillars. I just want to restate them so that we keep them in memory: the restoration, the stabilization, and the strengthening of traditional leadership institutions. An ongoing work, we ought to be involved in that particular work, including when we say strengthening and the stabilization, the election of the traditional councils, the democratization of the traditional councils, and also to bring them into space that they are also as active, alive, and representing the views of the communities in those communal areas. The second one is the development of policies, legislation and regulations towards transformation of the sector. We have to do that work on the transformation so that they become a developmental group. Thirdly is the establishment of the partnerships for revival and activation of economic activities and participation towards sustainable livelihoods in traditional communities working on the communal land itself. Then later allude to the agrarian revolution or agrarian reform that is now being planned. And then fourth is the promotion of cultural and customary way of life, which conforms to the Bill of Rights, constitutionality, and the democratic principles of our society. Well, as you will know that some of traditions and cultures are dated, and then they need to be engaged and then transformed so that they can then be in line with the Bill of Rights. I think those who come from the rural areas here will know about Uktwala, Ungenwa, you know, all those type of cultural forms that we can no longer allow them in a democratic dispensation because people have rights, they've got, and they must all enjoy these universal rights and cannot hide behind culture to then perpetuate and affect the vulnerable groups based on culture. As you know, that the issues of inheritance of the properties also becomes an issue. So Parliament and ourselves as a department, we ought to really to be engaging on the transformation of those particular issues, because culture is never static, culture is evolving, and culture must adapt. And then the other one is the issue of the coordination of interfaith and then cultural to promote social cohesion and nation building as a society. So guided by these five pillars, we are also taking into cognizance into our new annual performance plans the issue of what came out of the traditional leadership in Indaba, which was held last year in March, and in that particular meeting quite a number of landmark decisions were taken, and then they are now beginning to find expressions in our own annual plans. And I think as you look at the annual plans, you'll find that quite a number of worthy resolutions have been indicated. And among others is the Khoisan communities to be recognized in South Africa as part of the indigenous groups which were found on this land. The second is the promotion of socio-economic development in traditional communities. It also arose from the traditional Indaba. And the other is addressing concerns about land ownership in the communal land. Who owns the land? And the tenure of security issues are arising also. We'll be beginning to engage on those particular issues so that we could then bring stability and certainty in that particular area of the traditional communities, and also addressing the issues raised by traditional leaders and some communities in Skluma, which has already been indicated to us. So the traditional Indaba has brought these issues and we've put them in our lunar plans. The committee also will be looking at Parliament, particularly the NDA and the NCOP, as you process the three legislations that are very key and fundamental, the customary initiation bill, which is on its way, and the other one is the traditional leadership and governance framework amendment bill. I see, Chair, in our program of today, you have put it also as an agenda item, and we are not told that we must bring preparations around the negotiation mandates unless it's an internal house matter.
It was an internal matter. You are not expected to do any presentation on that one.
Okay,
we actually withdrew the item from the agenda.
Oh, no, thank you very much, because we are not prepared for it ourselves. But we are just indicating that it's one legislation, obviously, that ought to be looked at. And then the third legislation is the Traditional and Cohesive Leadership Bill, which understand that the Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, Free State, and Northwest are still to comment, bring in their own submissions. And we hope, therefore, that this matter could be fast-tracked, because we had made a commitment through government, through the president, that the Khoisan, by the time we go to the 2019 elections, they will be part of the recognized communities in South Africa. Therefore, 2019 elections are just 12 months away, and I hope by that time the Khoisans will have been a recognized entity in South Africa like all other communities enjoying similar rights. So obviously it's in the hands of the NCOP in your schedule, in your own agenda as to how you fast track this issue and the mandates, obviously, from the provinces as based on the law. We are also indicating here that the DCOC and the DTN, the Department of Human Settlements, and the local municipalities in the rural areas plan together with traditional leaders and local municipalities when allocating land for human settlement. There are tensions that are rising there. If we do not plan together, we don't coordinate, there tends to be resistance, there tends to be tensions that develops, and then service delivery gets frustrated and people do not get houses as a result of not working together and planning together. And as Deputy Minister Nelo was saying, that we are the engine of government. We need to ensure that cooperative governance is the system that is prevailing in South Africa. We are therefore to create this harmonious relationship between municipalities, department, and the local communities and traditional leaders in ensuring therefore that services do reach people. And in these services, most of them, they need land. You want a clinic, you need land. You want hospitals, you need land. You need schools, you need land. You need human settlement, you need land. So if land is not resolved in how we utilize it, using the special planning systems, instruments that now begins to build a new South Africa, this tends to going to be frustrating. So we therefore be working close with the NCOP in really helping us going through that particular issue, and we will therefore want your committee to be as involved so that we do not see it as government and the traditional leaders and the people. Parliament ought to be visible in meetings. There are other resolutions, Chair, that we also are alluding to in the inputs that are coming around the SALGA, which will be identifying certain laws that they will be bringing to Parliament, in particular the NCOP, to initiate certain legislation amendments. We hope, therefore, that when those laws, such as the Municipal Finance Management Act, Section 71 and 72, come, we will also be looking at it favorably in terms of expanding the mandatory municipalities and ensure, therefore, that the those that are limiting, then we are able to amend them accordingly. Also, SALGA and the traditional leaders will then also be engaging on issues of early warning systems, working with the Disaster Management Center, and they may then also be alluding to certain amendments that might also be considered by Parliament. And therefore, as I conclude, Chair, that this agrarian reform or revolution plan, it's aimed at the maximum utilization of land in the traditional communities, because there's a plenty of land that is lying fallow. Some of it was once developed with some kind of infrastructure in it, irrigation systems. We see railway lines also cutting across in certain parts of the country, but those are all idling, and then the steel is rusted. And therefore, the agrarian revolution is just to see how does the state, coming with all the sector departments, working with the communities and traditional leaders, begin to make sure that land is maximally utilized to grow, to animal husbandry, and all other activities that can first secure food security, secondly, to deal with the issues of extreme hunger and poverty, and thirdly, to see if we cannot help with whatever excess of the goods that are there to increase the markets, and also look at partnership as government and state, helping them really to begin to take our people back to the land, to till it maximally so that we could do with this. So the department is planning with other sector departments, and once the program is ready, it will be one of the programs that will be brought, adopted by cabinet first, and it will be brought to Parliament to say the intent, and then we are going to be driving it, and so that we could then begin to see land being maximally utilized. So, Chair, I think those are the issues that will be coming in some of the inputs that the team is here and is ready to present. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DM. You have touched, both of you, on very pertinent issues. Each of them in the main from where I'm sitting requires separate discussion, apart from APPs. Acting DG.
Thank you very much again, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, my Deputy Ministers, DG colleagues, I'm just going to take exactly the minutes granted to me. I won't be long and I will not be short. My presentation, Honorable Chairperson, is on the second last page of our presentation with a list of acronyms. So that in case I say things which will be acronyms that you're not used to, we did cover them at the back of the presentation. We're just going to, you know, get to the purpose and the DECOG strategic overview and also DECOG 2018-19 annual preference plan and 2018 MTEP budget allocation, followed by the recommendation that we'd like to get from the Honorable Members. We are presenting this to you, Honorable Members, as a select committee of our department, and the 2018-19 annual performance plan of the department and the budget allocation. But you take note that there's a word document on the issues that were raised previously by the Honorable Members of the committee, and we did attach that. We did respond to all of them. They are attached on our annual performance plan. The strategic overview of our department, I'm not going to dwell much on the issues of vision and mission. I'm sure you might have heard them before. What I'd like you to take note of is that our mission, just go back, our mission is sort of covering the five pillars of Back to Basics, whereby we're saying we're putting people first and we support the delivery of municipal services and promoting good governance and ensure sound financial management and building institutional resilience and administrative capability. The slide 7, where I'm at now, looks like a busy slide, but that slide is actually covering the medium-term strategy framework outcome 9, that's the outcome that we're responsible for, is DECOG, whereby we are covering the sub-outcome 1, where members of society have sustainable and reliable access to basic services. With your permission, Chairperson, I'm not going to dwell much on the related strategic outcome-oriented goals, but I will just cover for you the sub-outcome and then skip over to the strategic objective so that you can get an idea of what it is that we want to achieve through those objectives. The strategic objective 7.1, we are there to coordinate and facilitate sector collaboration for infrastructure development and municipal level to extend services to unserved communities that would have done by March 2020. And also want to strengthen intergovernmental arrangement for a functional system of cooperative governance. By so doing, we'll be deepening relationship between citizens and local government through what we call improved citizen engagement mechanism. On sub-outcome 3, democratic, well-governed, and effective municipal institutions capable of carrying out their development mandate. By so doing, we'll be strengthening the functionality of municipalities through the implementation of administrative and institutional systems by March 2020. Also, on sub-outcome 4, we'll be dealing with sound financial management, making sure that we do implement initiatives to improve financial sustainability and revenue management in local government by March 2020. Also, the local government employment programs expanded through the community work program, whereby we intend to provide 1 million work opportunities through effective and efficient program management and strategic partnership by March 2020. We are trying to align our outcome 9 with other outcomes. For example, with outcome 7, where they're dealing with vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities contribution towards food security, for sub-outcome 1, whereby they are improving the land administration and spatial planning for integrated development of rural areas. Our objective there is to facilitate the restructuring of municipal space economy through integrated development planning and spatial targeting by March 2020. Also on outcome 7, sub-outcome 3, whereby dealing with improved food security, we're trying to provide 1 million opportunities through effective and efficient program management and strategic partnerships. on outcome 14, nation building and social cohesion, all municipalities have recorded processes that demonstrate inclusion of the poor in budgeting processes, while deepening the relationship between the citizens and local government, as well as coordinating collaboration for infrastructure development at municipal level to extend services to unserved communities. That will do by March 2020. I'm getting to the programs of our department. We've got six programs in our department. I will start with program one under administration. That consists of DG's office, corporate services, and financial services. Our objective there is to improve DCOG governance processes and systems by March 2020. How do we do that? Our purpose is to make sure that the MPAT performance indicator seeks to improve strategic management, financial management, governance, and human resource management with the aim of improving compliance to key legislation, which in turn enables the department to deliver on its mandate. The second program, Program 2, Regional and Urban Development and Legislative Support, the purpose of it is to ensure that cities and towns are more inclusive, are resources efficient, and good places to live, shop, work, and play in as envisioned in the National Development Plan. Also, that program is also facilitating the improvement of financial health of municipalities through the development and rollout of a common framework on local economic development. Further on, the same program is also implementing an initiative to improve financial sustainability, revenue, and debt management in local government. The purpose of that is to make sure that we're facilitating the improvement in revenue management and accurate billing of property by municipalities. And our target there will be that the municipal-specific revenue plan will be implemented in 35 municipalities by 31st March 2019. And also, 110 municipalities will be assessed in terms of compliance with the rating of the Municipal Property Rates Act and findings and recommendations communicated to non-compliant municipalities on collective measures for the 2019-2020 financial year by 31st March 2019. And we are putting our head on the block by saying 100 municipalities will be supported to have functional work committees by 31st March 2019. The purpose of that is to respond to the challenges pertaining to the functionality and effectiveness of work committees as a key mechanism for deepening democracy at local level. We are also saying 80 municipalities will be supported to institutionalize community complaints management processes by 31st March 2019. The purpose of that is to ensure that municipalities are empowered with the fundamental institutional and management accountability processes and practices to deliver quality services responsible to the needs of the communities. Moving to Program 3, Institutional Development, whereby we are saying we'll train on anti-corruption strategy, which is rolled out in 13 district municipalities matters by March 2019. The purpose of that is to facilitate significant reduction in corrupt practices at local government level through good governance practices and strong accountability processes. We want to make sure that we are strengthening the functionality of municipalities through the implementation of administrative and institutional systems by March 2020, whereby our target will be 4 reports on appointment of senior managers concluded in line with the Municipal Systems Act regulations by March 2019. The purpose of that is to monitor compliance with legislative requirements on the appointment of senior managers in line with Municipal Systems Act and facilitate collective action by the members of the Executive Council through the Minister of COGTA. Moving to Program 4, National Disaster Management Center, we are saying that we want to improve a system of disaster management and the fire services across government by March 2020. And 12 municipalities will be assessed on the capacity to implement the National Fire Safety and Prevention Strategy by 31st March 2019. The purpose of that is to facilitate improvement in the capacity of municipalities to implement National Fire Safety Prevention Strategy. We're also going to commemorate the International Day for Disaster Reduction by 31st March 2019. The purpose is to share the best practices in effective disaster management system and coordination with special emphasis on prevention and mitigation. We're also saying that our target will be two disaster management priority guidelines which will be approved by the head of National Disaster Management Center by 31st March. The purpose is the guideline supports the implementation of disaster management legislation. Program 5, Honorable Chairperson, is local government support and intervention management. The target for that program is to make sure that the annual report on municipal performance progress will be based on the monthly B2B questionnaire by 31st March 2019. We want to ensure the continuous monitoring of municipal performance trends against the five back to basic pillars which I've mentioned earlier on. We want to make sure that 183 targeted municipalities will be monitored for compliance with the Division of Revenue Act by 31st March 2019. And the purpose of that is to make sure that we are monitoring the improvements in outcomes from the spending of existing grants and exercise stronger oversight from national department to ensure that municipal infrastructure is of high quality and enables smooth delivery of services to our communities. The program 6, which is community work program, are providing 1 million work opportunities through effective and efficient program management and strategic partnership by March 2020. We are saying that 241,960 work opportunities have been provided by 31st March, will be provided by 31st March 2019. In fact, have been provided by 31st March 2019. And also 24,196, 10% of that CW participants will be have been trained by 31st March 2019. And also the six partnerships have been established by 31st March 2019. Sorry, will be. The purpose of this was trying to contribute to reducing the high levels of poverty, unemployment, and inequality by providing work opportunities across all municipalities through partnerships to enhance the quality of work outputs and sustain project initiatives. I'm proud to say that we do have sites in all the municipalities in the country. I'm going to get to the MTF budget allocation. On this slide, Honorable Chairperson, with your permission, I'm going to focus mostly on the current year, 2018-2019. As you can see that we are putting everything there from 2017-18, 18-19, 19-20, and 2021. For administration, which is program one that I've mentioned, the 258,556,000, which is 6.4 average growth. Regional and urban development is 103,475,000, with a minus 22.4%. If I could explain that, the decrease of 22% in the budget allocation for Program 2, Regional and Urban Development and Legislative Support, is due to the phasing out of the demarcation transitional grant from 2018-19 financial year. And the institutional development will be having 63,111,536 and with an average growth of 11%. The National Disaster Management, 592,245 with an average growth of 20.1%. And local government support and intervention management will have 15,716,173 with a 1.3% average growth, with community work program having 3,869,903 with a 10.6% growth.
What is it, Honourable Member?
Chairperson, can I just request a repetition of why the regional and urban development and legislative support is minus 22%? I didn't catch that. I was trying to listen, but I couldn't. You weren't very clear. I was speaking too fast, but I couldn't
hear
it.
Okay, there's a footnote on the same slide. If you look further down, the decrease of 22% in the budget allocation of Program 2 regional urban development and legislative support is due to the phasing out of the demarcation seasonal grant from the 2018-2019 financial year. So that's why there is that reduction there. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. So the total amount is, you know, will be 83 billion, but please take note of the fact that a lot of transfers. That it does not mean that that is the money that we are using as a department. We do a lot of transfers onto that. I'm going to go to the allocations by economic classification. Even there, Chairperson, I won't waste your time. I'm just going to focus on the current financial year, 2018-2019, on the compensation of employees. It's 339,475,000. Goods and services, 3.1 billion. And transfers and subsidies, that's what I've just alluded to earlier on, is 80 billion. And then our department will be having 79 billion. The MIG, Municipal Infrastructure Support Agent, 342 million. Department of Traditional Affairs, 152. And then the payment for capital assets, which is 7502. And the payment for financial assets, which is 100. So the grand total for this financial year is 83,651 with a 9% average growth. Next slide. As I said earlier on, Chairperson, the medium-term expenditure framework allocation for 2018 division of funds. There's the current financial year is MTEF allocation transfers earmarked as special allocations. As you see that the municipal infrastructure grant is getting 15 billion, municipal systems improvement grant is getting 115 million, municipal disaster relief grant 349. Provincial Disaster Relief Grant, 123, and so on and so on. Those are the amounts that they are getting from our budget. The total is 83,093,284 for this financial year. And then below is the operational budget. The pie chart that you see there is how the monies have been divided, as I've mentioned in the previous slide. The DTA is getting the money, the MSIG, the NISA, the CWP, the 2018 allocation as has been explained on that slide. Chairperson, I think on time of 10 out of 10, these are the recommendations that we're giving to you. It is recommended that honorable members of the Select Committee on Cooperative Governance and National Affairs note the contents of our annual performance plan for DCOC, as well tabling it, as it was tabled in Parliament on the 12th of March, and comments from you will be appreciated. I thank you.
Thank you, Acting DG. I needed to make a certain comment. Now I regret. I think I should not make it. instead, allow members to throw questions and comments. I'm not sure if the MC want to come back. And okay. Members, questions and comments? Can I note hands first? Honorable Michalakis, Honorable Oliphant, two hands, and the chair of the COPTA Portfolio Committee from the Eastern Cape, three hands. In that order.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, my question to the Deputy Minister now is very specific to my province. I come from the Free State. I think you share a lot of the concerns that we have over there. I'm becoming increasingly worried with regards to the ability of the municipalities in the Free State to deal with their financial problems. It has an effect on the basic service delivery. 2 years ago, I wrote a letter requesting the Minister and the Deputy Minister to look into the water crisis that was in Brandfort. It's been going on for a decade already. it has now become so problematic that in that municipality, for example, if a basic thing breaks, there's no money to fix it, there's no money to do any infrastructure maintenance, and as a consequence, the municipality tells the community, no, but this part needs to be imported from Denmark. In the meantime, it can be bought 40 kilometers away in Bloemfontein, but that's just a way to buy time to say that we need 2 weeks to import this from Denmark, and then they scurry around trying to find money from somewhere. And then it's basic things. It's not things that cost millions and millions of rands, which indicates clearly that that municipality is, for all purposes, bankrupt. Then you sit with Mangaung, you sit with Machabeng, you sit with Putarichawa, that literally owe billions and billions and billions of rands to Eskom and the water board. It's become so every day that it's almost become a part of the people's lives, which is very sad, and it's concerning. I think that you share this concern. My big question is, we have from our side suggestions as to how some of these problems can be solved, but what I would like to hear from you is how you as the national department, very well knowing that you need to respect the municipalities duties and their rights as well. You can't just move in and take it over. You probably also don't have the funds to do it. But there is something as cooperative governance, and we need to be able to support each other. My question is, with the crisis being already so big and municipalities having allowed it to become so big, how on earth can the province and the national department assist so that at least it can be stopped from getting worse, and then the municipalities be put on a path to recovery? I think, just as a last comment, I think to a great extent the qualifications of a lot of the financial and accounting officers internally is to blame for some of this general management of the municipalities as well. The province is not in a financial position to bail these municipalities out. How do we turn the ship around? Because it's at this stage gotten to such a point where the municipalities' pit of financial ruin where they find themselves in is starting to, on a daily basis, affect the lives of ordinary people to such an extent that the ordinary people, and I use the word ordinary as saying the general public, that they actually start accepting having no water as a given. And that is a point where we should never ever arrive at in our country again. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
All the fun.
Yeah, sure. I will now throw my questions, all of it, one time. But I will throw it to both the ministers. Chair, I would like to start with the, I don't know, in the Northern Cape we call it DPWP. I know it's a public work function, but now with the national COCTA, I want to understand how do you push the municipalities to go on with the EPWP, because I once had a meeting, public meeting of the EPWP. There are those who appreciate this work. But now I also want to understand, are they also in the pipeline of this this increase of public water? The 3,000, 3,500, you understand? This government increase of 3,500 for the farmers and all that. I'm sure the Deputy Minister, you understand.
Oh, the minimum wage.
Yeah, the minimum wage, I want that wage. So, then I want to understand the infrastructure. I'm finished there. the infrastructure. Because I want to understand, are you coping with the infrastructure together with the houses? Because I can see, Honorable Minister, the community just dance for you, close the road, and they want houses, and there you are. You need to look for money somewhere else just to make things. Is there a way that maybe, besides what you have given for the year in houses, in the infrastructure, is there no additional one that you can work up front? Like, if there is a land up front that can put sewage pipe and water pipes in the up front, knowing that when I get my budget next year, I'm starting with the houses up front, because now it seems to me in the community it's a norm. We were trying to do away with the shanties, but the more we're trying to do away, the more the shanties come, because whenever you build a house there, the shanty just go to the other side of the road, and there it is now again settlement. We were used to tell that, no, we will cope. But to be honest, as the situation is, you won't be able to cope. And talk this thing out now, because my brothers and sisters say if they are in power, they will cope. They will never cope, because when they are in power, I'm going also to put my shanty there. I would like to talk about the land kings vis-a-vis councillor. I am sure the Honorable Vasela. I want to understand if there's council meetings. The councillors, because I want Manmet to emphasize that every council meeting, there must be a traditional leader in the council meeting. Because it seems to me the king does not know what is happening in council. And now there is this backlog of the traditional leaders. The traditional leaders say the councillors are undermining them. Because I am a councillor, this is my word, and I've received an IDP, and I need to do something this year. And no king will tell me, and it's not working. Because then we hear the king said, but this land belongs to me. Now we are all in one pot. Maybe if every municipality, when they hold council meeting, there must be a traditional leader to understand what is going to happen, where and what. And if need be, if they query, they must also hold meeting where they call the mayor and the whoever in, because every now and then when you go to public hearings, you also hear that this councillor is undermining me. And we don't want that, because sooner or later, the councillor and the king must share the land. I would like my last question, Chair Eskom. Chair Eskom needs us, and we need Eskom. But I don't know, for the last 2 years I had Eskom, but no one is making Eskom quiet. You see this municipality that they don't have electricity in the building, they are suffering. And those that they sell electricity in the building, they are gaining with Eskom. Because the ones that they don't have electricity, that they don't sell electricity, people are buying electricity straight from Eskom. The people don't pay, because they know now they must pay for the sewage, they must pay for the taking of the bills and all that. Then they don't worry about it. So as long as I am having electricity, I don't care about the others. But now when you come to a place, you see that people are not paying, even the shops are not paying. So for me, I normally tell the municipality that people are not paying, the shops are not paying. It means you are lazy in that municipality because you need to look for a debt collector to collect it. I once said the MM in the progress with that. As the service of the court, give them letters, the shops. After that, you go with the service of the court to go and lock the shops. And you must wait until it's month end. The stock is full. Then you close the shops. Everybody will pay because there is business inside there. Everybody will pay. But now, every now and then, they are suffering. Now, I want you to ask Honorable Deputy Minister, what are you doing to help out? Because you discussed this thing in the MANMAC and you finished it. As a national office, are you sending people out, especially to those municipalities that now, every now and then, we will hear in this committee 139C, what C? We don't go with 139C. The story there is, what are you doing to help? Together with the National Treasury, is there something that you receive from the provinces? Because when I was a chair of COXA in my province, whenever I visited the 32 municipalities, every region, I was taking Treasury with me. Treasury must answer, COXA must answer, to tell me that how are they helping this municipality out to overcome this thing of. But now it seems to me Eskom is a pain man. Thank you.
Honorable Nyosile.
No, thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. Chair, I think I partly agree with what you are saying with some of the issues raised by both deputy ministers that they need another platform to engage. For an example, Chair, if I can cite one issue which was raised, the issues around regulation, particularly on appointment of Section 56 and 57 managers, it's a crisis in that province of Eastern Cape, where sometimes we've got contracts that are renewed without them being advertised. So I'm saying, in that particular aspect, we've got a more or less crisis that needs to be addressed. The second issue, Chair, in the same matters which were raised around the issues of forensic investigation, most of those municipalities went through that process. But when such findings are to be implemented, because, you know, local government is highly regulated, whatever you do, you must subject it to a council. When they get to a council meeting, they are not taken as serious. So if you are to centralize that aspect, it would address some of those, you know, challenges. But, Chair, an issue which I think both DMs must also help us in the province, issues of Sploma, for an example. We've got traditional leaders in that province who say this is our piece of land. There is no way that we'll agree with what you are saying as government, particularly on Sploma matters. And what you are bringing here, which is very key and fundamental, this concept of this agrarian revolution, how do you take forward that aspect if you've got such, you know, challenges at that level, where you've got traditional leaders who are claiming to say this is our land, there will be no Sploma here, and you see that particular land is, you know, there fallow, and you'd want to see to that there is food security, you know, meant for our communities. The second aspect which was raised by DM Nell, National Treasurer's attitude of not bailing out municipalities, I'm referring to, which gets me very worried, you know, like the honorable member from Free State, the newly established municipality in the province, they are all collapsing, honorable Chair and honorable DM, all of them.
And I think we are still very angry as the and worried as the portfolio committee in that province, because we had a delegation that came to the National Assembly to say you can't be amalgamating municipalities that are both poor and expect, you know, excellent rewards out of that. For example, in Lukanji, in Queenstown, before amalgamation, that municipality had 90 million reserve. But you have to bring other local municipalities with their own problems. But 90 million reserve is no more there. Instead, the municipality is owing millions of rand to Eskom. And such an idea, which was coming from the national minister by then, could never help us. And I'm saying, how do you then talk to national treasurer and address the issue of saying no bailout to municipalities? Because those communities now, they are suffering. Eskom is saying they are given few days now that they are going to be switched off. And how do you help those communities to go out of that situation if National Treasurer is saying we are not going to do any bail out in terms of those issues? And the other issue around the Eskom tariffs, National Department help us too. Most of our municipalities would be indebted to Eskom the rest of their existence if we don't address the issues of Eskom tariffs. It's a matter that I think it needs your attention, whether you work with national treasurer, because I don't see them getting out of that area. There are also issues which I also want them to elaborate more, Honorable Chair, around the district. My understanding is that districts are supposed to give support to those local municipalities, and I don't see that happening. And again, DM Nell spoke about Section 154, which is a constitutional imperative. The, you know, continuous support that must be given to municipalities before arriving to Section 139. How do you help departments like the Eastern Cape where there is no capacity? No capacity to continue that Section 154 and make sure that at least you are able to address, because that becomes very fundamental before arriving to Section 154. The last one, create harmonious relationship between local government and traditional leadership. It's an issue. It's an issue there. Some of the traditional leaders, even those who are sitting on councils, they don't value their support in there. They see themselves as people who might be given more support. And I'm saying that particular area, it's very problematic, because that part of space is a space which is not democratic, like the councillors, but they still want to be in the same power level with our own councillors. And that creates serious tension amongst the leadership of the council and traditional leaders. And what do you bring in there to make sure that at least we create this harmonious relationship between those two spheres of or entities, in making sure that we don't get involved in some of this problem. And the decrease of 22% in the phasing out of this demarcation transitional grant, what does it mean to the work that was done by this demarcation transitional in making sure, if there is such 22% decrease, what would happen to the work that was done by that particular area? Thank you, Chair.
Deputy Minister, I have noted quietly two other hands after I have noted and recognized the first three. Can I take the two hands before you come in response? I will start with Honorable Engelbrecht, then Honorable Chetty will then come.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I really appreciate this presentation, and I think what is important is that this presentation is about the mandate of local government to respond to the needs of the community. And in line of that, my question is that looking at the amount of municipalities that are in financial distress, it would appear to me that the basic Back to Basics program is not working, that there's something preventing it to be implemented effectively. The Deputy Minister mentioned the outstanding Eskom tariffs, water board, money owed to municipalities, and that there's a task team being set up to address that. However, what is it that we can do or that we can change so that we can assist municipalities to govern themselves better? I mean, we have got SALGA. There are so many workshops that have been given and been provided. Yet it seems to be a continual issue of municipalities that are not able to govern themselves from a financial perspective, and that there's corruption and all these other type of challenges that they're experiencing. So what is it that we can do? Do we have to change the way we operate? Do we have to change the way we interact with the municipalities? What, in their opinion, is the best way to look at this? That is the first thing. And then secondly, I'm not sure if it's the Structures or the Systems Act. We spoke about the ward committees. As far as I remember, that ward committees have to be elected within 3 months of new government. So I'm just concerned a little bit that if we wait until 2019 to ensure all the ward committees are elected, we're talking about 2016, which was the last local election, so we're talking about 2-3 years afterwards. Are we not then in contravention of that act? I just want clarity in terms of that. And then the Deputy Minister also spoke about the under-expenditure of grants, which is a huge concern. We've got the money available for the municipalities, and yet the municipalities aren't spending these grants. And what does he suggest, he and his department suggest, that we do or change to improve this? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chetty.
Thanks, Chair. On Struma and some of the other stuff that I'm covered in, I'm not going to repeat myself. Just to say that I'm glad that the Deputy Minister of Appeal made reference to the traditional leadership and government framework amendment bill that's on our agenda. Just for you to note as well, Deputy Minister, there's much confusion between both that bill and the traditional and Khoisan leadership bill. Provinces are having challenges with that, just so that you, just for noting. Secondly, to Deputy Minister now, you spoke about Hawks, and you know there's quite a few SIU investigations that are still outstanding in certain municipalities that are critical on whether they be placed under administration or not. Sadly, we hear of these, but the reports themselves are not tabled, and very often, and you cannot blame the perception out there to the communities when they believe that something has been swept under the carpet. A point in case is the SIU with KSA in Mzinduzi. You spoke about a database and the anti-corruption, whereby those of senior officials in certain provinces or departments or councils will be highlighted. I must just beg to differ with you, Deputy Minister. I'm going to give you a name. The name is Adolf Slindekule Hadeba, a senior manager in Ekuruleni. He's now appointed as a missile manager in Mzinduzi. All he did was change his name to Sizwe Hadebe. So I'm not sure how good our systems are in place to make sure we can track this when a mere change of a name makes it like there's a new person in the system and the guy gets the job as a Section 57 municipal manager. So that's a concern. We speak about the building systems, and you spoke about the regional economic development and planning. Maluta Pofung, we're all well aware of what's happening there with intervention. We have a company that put in a billing system that does not speak to each other. I'm sure you're aware that for the last, I think it's 13 months, that city has not been billed because of the system. We speak about the district support teams. Currently I have an issue because I believe more of our rural municipalities are failing because of the lack of support from district municipalities. When we go to intervene, we hear about the challenges they have, but very seldom do we hear of the assistance provided by district municipalities to those local municipalities. Again, we refer to the back to basics, and I wouldn't say the predecessor, but the predecessor to the past minister of COPTA, Pravin Gordhan, brought in the back to basics in 2014. And I have a concern when we say, if you keep on doing the same thing over and over again, don't expect a different outcome. Unfortunately, here we must question ourselves. If I go back to that time, and again, Deputy Minister, now you will be very clear when the then Minister Pravin Gordhan said that one third of the municipalities were functioning, one third were at risk, and one-third were dysfunctional. So let's go back in time. In 2017,
22nd, we had seems like I've lost my notes unless somebody decides to
reach you.
Yeah. It's like okay, yeah. We created a fourth category with the current minister's wedding cheeses breakdown of the status of municipalities in KZN. From three we went to four categories. And this is what he said last week. 7% were well functioning. 31% were reasonable. Another 31% almost dysfunctional. And the last 31% dysfunctional or distressed. Now, my question comes to, if back to basics, which what we all agreed to when we went to NASREC, that's where we launched it, and we said this is what's going to get us getting local council or local government getting back to grassroots issues, the potholes, the grass, the verges, every single thing. And how is it that from that, sorry, Chair, can I get some protection because this newly elected member of this committee was not around that time when we started. There was still an MPL in one of the...
You are protected.
There was still an MPL in one of those provinces.
You are protected, the Honourable
Chair. Thank you, Chair. So, you see, my problem is this. Surely it can't be right if we regress from 31% to 7%. I mean, the other three categories of 31% in between, I'm not going to split hairs over 33 and 31%. But when we get from 7% down to, and this is not what I said, I've just Googled it now because I didn't get the minister's speech sent to me, but it's on Google, and that's what he said, 7%, and that can't be acceptable. Now surely we should be addressing that issue as to whether back to basics is helping us or hindering us. Mr. you spoke about us going through for section, rather up to section 154 intervention rather than 139. Now, we agree that 139 must be the very last resort. But unfortunately, we've got so many municipalities now that are in distress that we don't have the time to start looking at 154 because the amount of damage done thus far, giving them another 3 months brings it to total collapse. And when you get total collapse, you're going to get anarchy like what you're getting now in KZN and the Northwest. It's because we start to take our time in wanting to intervene for fear, and Chair, you can call me out of order, for fear of factionalism. So we drag our feet because we don't want to compromise ourselves. In the interim, we're making the case
that can only be speculation, isn't it? I think they must qualify it.
But you share, I never say which province. It can be any province. Give me through the rest in case, so I wasn't specific. But if you know which province, then we could for you. The other issue and I'm gonna take the liberty now of following in the suit of the previous speaker from Free State. I'm gonna speak about KZN and in particular Imsunduzi. This is a point in case where this council, 2 years ago, received the best performing council in KZN. The best performing. The mayor is removed, the municipal manager is removed. They now have a disclaimer. Minister Mchiz as well mentions it in his speech. You know for the fact that he sent a letter to the MEC of Kokta and KZN. The problem we have, and herein lies I will call it the Achilles heel, Deputy Minister. The name of the very same municipal manager I referred to earlier was forwarded by this minister's MEC's officers to Imsunduzi for the shortlisting of the Section 47 employees when that vacancy occurred.
get into that rift, you must understand why there's resistance by that MEC to place this council under administration. Previously, the issue here was the appointment of the MM himself and his qualifications. You now have the council, they are running on a deficit budget. They have abused the MIT funding, and yet they are not one of those five municipalities in KZN placed under administration. Tragically, and I say this with all sincerity and solemnness, had the MEC acceded to the call to place Ms. Nduzi under administration, I think when Minister Mchi sent a letter to her, which was about 6 weeks ago, we could have saved the life of a former councillor, Comrade Kashana, who was killed last week. And that's the person that the Honourable Minister made reference to in his budget speech. Now, it goes beyond the fact that we're just talking about poor service delivery. There's now loss of life. And I think it's unacceptable, Deputy Minister, if we come to that part of it.
Honourable Chair,
I'm concluding,
Your time is expiring.
I'm concluding, Chair. Of the 257 municipalities, only 55 have qualified engineers. That's according to the report. And surely this is an avenue that we should identify how to capacitate, because this is where the problem with councils abusing the MIG funding for salaries. And Chair, I just want to find out on slide 13. Of the 35 municipalities that have been identified for the revenue plan implementation, are the 27 identified by the minister inclusive of the 35? Similarly, of the 110, is the 87 municipalities identified by the minister included in that 110? Thank you, Chair.
Maybe for future, Honourable Chair, we should include in the rules that there must be speaking time allocated in committees for members. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. So I will be speaking on behalf of the entire committee. Thank
you. No, you will. Honourable Kubi, just the last one, DM Vapela. Is on a Ninga Kulu, maybe in Kozileza or Kuluma Match.
Thank you, Chair. After a lot of questions have been asked, I won't be long. It's just because, Honourable Chair, I'm living here in the Western Cape. I can see a lot of members are talking about their provinces. Chair, I'm living here. The city of Cape Town is one city, is one into two. City of Cape Town, therefore, those who are rich are those who are poor. Recently, Chair, the city of Cape Town has been, there was a sort of paper and other that delay involving corruption. There's a lot of corruption within the city of Cape Town. As a result, one of the experienced city manager resigned. Now there is an acting city manager. And there is also infighting. The mayor and the governing of the Western Cape. I would like to know from the national government if things are like that, because now you find that when the elephant and the big animal are fighting, the grass is suffering, and therefore those who are eating the grass are hungry. And here, Chairperson, you'll find that there are a lot of fires in our poor, and the poor are very, very, very suffering in this infighting of the city of Cape Town. And I know this is Western Cape is not governed by this national government. There is another government which is governing this province. Now it's difficult to intervene in this thing. Yes, there are people are suffering. I want to check whether the national government cannot intervene because the people are suffering in this city. Eastern Cape. I'm just worrying of being a fire brigade. You know, fire brigades, they will come up when the fire is burning. Then you say, we. There were indicators saying that, hey, this thing is going to be a trouble. Then why the national government cannot come? And I remember, Chairperson, I said, we are not far as NCOP. We can even take our bags and not use even a car to go and do an oversight in this city of Cape Town. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I don't know who's going to start between you, Deputy Minister Nelly Mbapela. I think Shuba Bela, I saw your hand up.
No, thank you very much. I think, can we agree that all the issues raised on traditional leadership, the input is still coming? And okay, if indeed there are gaps in the input, then we'll then respond to those questions earlier raised. If that is going to be in order, and then we only focus on the municipalities, as the input was more on the municipalities.
Okay.
And then also to correct Honorable Chetty, that Back to Basics was not adopted at Nazareth. It was adopted at Galaga Estate. Yeah, so I think if you could then stick to the right thing. Thank you.
You are very interested in Nazareth. Honorable Ned.
Thank you very much. And I don't just say that for the sake of saying that, because it does demonstrate indeed what we were saying at the beginning of the meeting, that the relationship between COGTA and the NCOP, I think, is a very special one and that should be strengthened. And I think that comes across very, very clearly in the quality and the depth of the questions posed by members. I mean, it's very clear that you're not just making statements for the sake of statements. You are really engaged in those matters. I'm going to try and touch upon most of these areas, but maybe at a higher political level, and then indicate that the relevant officials can go into some of the details. Some of them I'll point specifically, others I'm sure you know what your areas are. I think firstly, to a number of colleagues have raised the examples of specific municipalities. Now, I mean, it's going to be difficult to go into the specifics of each one of them here. But just to say that as a general proposition, the approach that was adopted in 2014 at Gallagher Estate of Back to Basics was not something that was just plucked out of the air. First of all, it built on a number of previous interventions that had been made since the establishment of democratic local government in 1996. And I think let's remind ourselves that the current system of local government is approximately 15, 16 years old. It's younger than our democracy. We had to consolidate over 1,200 local government entities under apartheid, homeland systems, black local authorities, into the coherent system of local government that we have now. So, I mean, those institutions also take time to develop. And when we say that, it's in no way to negate the urgency, the burning urgency of many of the challenges that we face at the moment. But let's also realize that institutions take time to build. Back to Basics then was formulated on the back of local government turnaround strategy, Operation Consolidate, Operation Clean Audit. And that wasn't just changing, you know, programs like you change fashion. Yes, those programs might have different names, but if you actually look at them, there's a continuity there. So B2B, based on evaluation of municipalities, if I remember correctly, we used probably about 30 different criteria: service delivery, citizen satisfaction, political stability, technical capacity, etc., that arrived at those three categories. I think what Minister Mkhize was putting forward was not differing with that. I think there are emphases there. I mean, I think the introduction, for example, of the category of distressed is referring specifically to financial statement, status of the municipality. Also, I think if you look at the three broad, even though he might have subdivided, the three broad categories actually still stand. So I don't think we've regressed from 30% well-functioning to only 7%. I think he's just defined the categories or subdivided them a little bit more. And certainly if you look at what's happened since 2014, there have been a number of very successful interventions. We had an absolute disaster in Oudtshoorn. I mean, that's been turned around. It's been turned around through an intervention that was done jointly by national and provincial government. The situation in Nelson Mandela Bay, I mean, also stabilized and turned around. Again, a joint intervention, national, provincial. A municipality like Mogalakwena, which at one stage was dominating the headlines, again, stabilized, busy turning around, national, provincial, joint intervention. The case of Umthunduzi, I mean, as you correctly referred to, there was a time, and some years ago, I was chairing a structure called the Rapid Response Team. I mean, that went into Umthunduzi and turned it around. And as you point out correctly, I mean, it was winning Best Municipality of the Award, the Year Awards. It regressed. So I think the point out of that to make is that through patient, consistent, and more importantly, collaborative work, we've demonstrated that by following that back-to-basics approach, we do make difference. We do stabilize, we do turn around municipalities, and some of them quite sustainably. Obviously, there will be advances and retreats in any process. So I think the back-to-basics approach is a sound one. And it is yielding results. And I think, as Minister Mkhize outlined in his budget speech, we've learned from experience, and we've learned how to implement back to basics much more effectively. At a political level, what we are doing at the moment is moving into those provinces with the highest and the most acute incidence of dysfunctional municipalities. So Minister Mkhize kicked off exactly in the Eastern Cape. And the approach follows a very comprehensive one. Minister, deputy ministers, together with a very senior team from the department, going into a province, working with a province, working with SALGA, actually going on the ground and visiting those dysfunctional municipalities, not just sitting in the mayor's parlor, but convening community meetings, meeting with the different sectors, meeting with residents, meeting with business, meeting with academics, meeting with traditional leaders, really underscoring the point that local government is everyone's business and it affects everyone, but we also have a joint responsibility to input into its success. We are now gearing up. The next provinces that are scheduled for visits would be Northwest, I think for very obvious reasons, followed by the Free State, again for very obvious reasons. A municipality like Mpumalanga, I think, has a slightly different set of issues, but we know that there are very, very acute problems when it comes to municipal debt, and for that reason we'll be paying a visit to that province as well. We hope eventually to have covered all provinces in that manner. What we've put in place to underpin those interventions at a political level, we will ask Mr. Vimba to speak about, would be those district teams, those 55 district teams that would be providing the necessary technical backup to underscore those interventions. And I think we'll ask him also then to elaborate about the question of providing support also in terms of Section 154 to municipalities. I just want to underscore that we must also avoid being mechanical in our approach to interventions. I don't want to now get into the political debates of my party, but I mean, I'm sure that the colleague would remember the big and very intense debates around the two-stage theory. So I don't we're not propagating a mechanical two-stage theory when it comes to interventions to say you must first intervene in 5154 before you intervene in 139. The Constitution is very clear. Section 139 kicks in when a municipality is unable to execute its executive and its other constitutional vigor. Once that point has been reached, you intervene. 154, no 154. But what we're saying is that in order to make those interventions sustainable, we must also follow the approach that's outlined in the National Development Plan, which says go a bit easier on regulation, on heavy-handed interventions, spend more time on working consistently over a period of time with those municipalities so that when you do intervene, the intervention is more effective and more sustainable. So I think, I hope, I mean, in that point, I'm not going to deal with Brandfort, Mangaung, Machabeng, except to say that they are very, very firmly on our radar and we'll be covering them in the provincial visit. I just want to fast forward. Sorry, I'm not going to necessarily deal with members' questions by name in sequence, but try to cover the themes. Those areas, I mean, I'm touching now on the Free State ones, but it applies to all of the other municipalities that are mentioned. Those things have huge impact in the ability, in our ability to get our economy going and to create jobs. Those Free State municipalities have big, big players, Nestle, Escort, etc., that have come to us and said, look, we want to stay here, we want to invest, we want to create jobs. But if we can't get a guarantee that we're going to get water and electricity, we have no option. We've got to move and go elsewhere. And therefore, it's a burning, burning issue to stabilize those municipalities exactly so that we can have business coming there. We've often said that one of the best local economic development strategies that you can implement is back to basics. Do the basics right, and already you're creating a fertile ground for local economic development. Also, just to say that on the issue of municipal debt, I think it's important not to deal with the question in generalities. It's not municipalities in general that are owing Eskom. The reality is that 70% of that 16 billion rand that's owed by municipalities to Eskom is owed by 10 municipalities out of 257. It's not a general local government disaster. We know the municipality. And if you go within those 10, you narrow it down. I mean, a municipality like Maluti Apofung, I mean, account even for a lion's share within that. Yeah? So, you know, let's be specific. Let's zoom in. And the question becomes, why in that municipality has it degenerated? Why has Msunduzi regressed? I mean, objectively speaking, there's no reason why those municipalities should be in the state that they're in. There are other municipalities that you can mount a cogent argument to say, and this starts addressing your question about the non-viable municipalities and the question of configuration. There are municipalities that are simply unviable. They don't have a tax base. They're going to be grant dependent for the foreseeable future. So the question is, what do you do? I mean, the one option has been to try and reconfigure, and that's come with all of its own share of complications. In some cases, it makes sense. In other cases, I mean, we've had to learn the hard way. And I think some of the officials will talk about how we're helping those municipalities, but we've also had a number of engagements with the demarcation board around the broad approach. To those matters of reconfiguration. It also does raise the longer-term systemic issues around the local government financial and fiscal model of how we finance our municipalities. And that's work that we're doing together with National Treasury, with SALGA, with the FFC. Member Oliphant, the issue of infrastructure and housing, I think, I think we'll ask Mr. Vimba and Misa to deal with. But just to say that the whole issue of human settlement, I think Minister Mkhize also touched upon this in his budget speech when he talked about the implementation of the IUDF and saying that we also need to look critically at our existing human settlement model and pose the question whether building loose-standing houses, one, is affordable, sustainable, and two, whether it speaks to what we want to achieve spatially in terms of creating more compact, connected cities and towns. And it also links to the question of land, and within that, emphasizing the importance of the urban land question, and not only the question of agricultural land. The proposal, I think he specifically referred to, we said that we need to take seriously the proposal that instead of building houses, we will also focus on providing land as a service that will enable people to build their own houses, and in that way to anticipate and to manage the very, very high rates of urbanization that we face. Appointment of Section 57 managers and the forensic investigations, I'll ask Mr. Mukashuping to deal with. Also some of the interventions with regard to the Eskom debt and the details. And the Msunduzi issue, that manager, I'm told that we're aware of that case. But just to say that, and also if someone could speak to the details of the cases that are with the Hawks. I believe it's, if I recall, it's something like, I think, 308 cases, and there's a breakdown of how many are under investigation, how many are before court, and how many have been dismissed. Issues of Spluma and traditional leaders, I think Deputy Minister Bapela will also talk about, but just to say that we are both looking at that. I think the newly established municipalities we've dealt with. The question of EPWP, I mean, that just, I think the members are aware that EPWP is a distinct program and one that falls under the Department of Public Works. We are dealing with community work program. I think Mr. Satisho can say a bit more about the issues of remuneration. We have had a number of engagements at the level of NEDLAC and arguing that because of its nature, it would not be appropriate to bring a program like CWP into the question of minimum wages. I think the issue of ward committees will also be dealt with under the expenditure on grants. MISA will deal with I think just also to say that the question of the safety of councillors is something that is a very, very great concern to us. And it's a matter that we dealt with, in fact, at the end of last week at MINMEC. We've established a joint team with the MECs and with SALGA, and we're pursuing, Minister Mkhize is pursuing a meeting with the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster. For us, it's both the lives of individual councillors, those are public representatives, those are human beings that have families and loved ones that are being brutally cooped and being assassinated in cold blood. and that touches us very deeply, but also those councillors are the face of the state, the entire state at local government level, and those attacks then are attack on the integrity of our state. And we're saying that is just not acceptable. We need to get to the bottom of what is driving those killings, but we also need to take the appropriate measures to ensure the safety of our councillors. I think the question of the engineers, MISA will deal with. They've done quite a lot of work around that. The question of Cape Town, certainly the developments in Cape Town, like in any municipality in the country, would concern us. I mean, to have a major metro, especially one that is undergoing the kinds of challenges related to drought and other factors that it is, to experience that level of political instability, I think is certainly undesirable, and we are keeping a close eye on that. We would obviously work with the province, and we hope that there will be the stability there. The issue of the fires, we'll ask Disaster Management Center to also speak to, issue of great concern for us. Colleagues, if I have missed anything glaring, please do draw that to my attention, but I think let's also give the officials chance to speak. They might be covering the area. Thank you.
I've had four names mentioned. That was Honorable Moshoping, Honorable Setisho, Honorable Misa, and what? Can we respond to issues in that sequence?
I think Honorable Chair will, and Deputy Minister will...
You know what, Mr. Vimba is still meant to do a presentation. So I think quite a number of issues that relate to infrastructure, to the engineers, to the district support would be covered in his input. So maybe with the agreement of the committee, we hold back on those until he's presented.
Thanks, DM. Honorable members, in relation to the question relating to the financially distressed municipalities in provinces, COGTA has taken an initiative in those identified municipalities in all the provinces that we develop what we call simplified revenue enhancement plans in those municipalities to assist them with revenue enhancement. So we have identified those, and we have gone to those municipalities on a hands-on approach and have assisted them to develop this simplified revenue enhancement plans. Furthermore, we have also joined hands with national treasury at national level and also at provincial treasuries, and we have also targeted those financially distressed municipalities, and we have developed what we call financial recovery plans. So apart from the revenue enhancement plans, we have now done what we call financial recovery plans, and we are in the process of looking at the implementation of those financial recovery plans together with national and provincial treasuries. The impact thereof will be seen after the implementation of the two plans. Then we'll see how this will impact on improving the financial status of those municipalities. The third portion that we did as an intervention to those financially distressed municipalities was to look at going in those municipalities that are owing ESCOM. COGTA, National and Provincial Treasury, ESCOM, and SALGA, we went to those municipalities and we assisted them with drafting what you call the payment plans. Because most municipalities, because they were threatened with shutoffs, they then agreed in relation to how they're going to repay ESCOM, and that is not sustainable. So we are going back to those municipalities together with ESCOM and SALGA and ourselves and National Treasury and Provincial Treasuries to assist them to draft the affordable and sustainable repayment plans. We've already done that in 55 municipalities, and we can say that up from the number that we have, 32% of those municipalities are now honoring the repayment plans that we have drafted together with them in ESCOM. So in that way, there is some sort of a movement in relation to assisting them to repay ESCOM. The COCTA also has established what we call the INTT, the Interministerial Task Team, headed by our minister. In that team, there is a political INTT and a technical INTT. We are looking at ways of resolving the issue of ESCOM once and for all. Part of it being the structural and constitutional challenges that we have in relation to the question of ESCOM. As you are aware, that municipalities and SAGA are saying that SAGA is not, ESCOM is not supposed to be distributing electricity in municipal space. And there is the interpretation different by municipalities and by ESCOM. So that particular committee has been set up solely to look at ways of resolving this matter once and for all. That is a directive that we got from the PCC in relation to us forming this particular committee. There are some highlights that we reached as a result of this constant meeting of this committee, to an extent that we have agreed on the prime rate on the interest. We have agreed on the period of the repayment from 15 to 30 days. So those are the issues that this particular committee has succeeded in doing. Lastly, in relation to that particular INTT, the minister have appointed a panel of advisors to look at the constitutional and systematic challenges that are there between ESCOM and municipalities. So that particular panel has been given a leverage of a time period of 4 months to finalize and work and give the report to the minister. The intention of the whole process is not for us to go to court to get the declaratory order, but to try to see that we use the available mechanisms in place to finalize the dispute between municipalities and ESCOM. So in our next briefing, we'll be giving you the outcome of the intervention that COCTA has done in relation to the payment of ESCOM debt and the systematic and constitutional challenges that we have in relation to resolving the problem between the two. So that is in relation to ESCOM and the financially distressed municipalities. We are working together with National Treasury and Provincial Treasury to see that this matter is resolved. This inter-ministerial committee comprises of a Minister of COCTA, Treasury, Energy, DPME, SALGA, and ESCOM. So all those other relevant stakeholders are also involved in this. The other issue that I want to bring to the honorable members is that the municipalities are not only owing ESCOM, and we are not only tackling the issue of ESCOM as an isolated matter. We are also looking at the debt by municipalities to water boards, which is even more than this. And the same municipalities that owe ESCOM are the same culprits in relation to water boards. We are also looking at making them financially viable. And financially viable doesn't mean that they should be able to pay ESCOM, but also to pay their third parties, because they are unable to do that. Some of them are unable to pay salaries, and the whole package. COCTA is looking at making these municipalities financially viable so that they meet all the obligations in relation to repayment of whatever debt that they have. So there is a collective thing that COCTA is doing in relation to that particular matter. In relation to the issue of appointment of senior managers, the specific question relating to the extension of contracts. The law as it stands provides for the extension of contracts of senior managers only on condition that in the contract of employment there is a stipulation that there should be an extension. If there is an extension clause, then municipalities are within their rights to extend those contracts upon the termination of those contracts. So that's the point. It's in the law, it's in the Systems Act, it's the law. Until such time that it's amended, municipalities to a particular extent will not be advertising, but to look at that particular section that gives them the right to extend. But what we have said to municipalities is that the ideal situation is for positions to be advertised once they become vacant. But even in the event that, that there is an extension, care should be taken in relation to what should happen in relation to the salary packages. That the new regime in relation to salary packages will apply. That you won't extend the contract of a senior manager who has any 4 million, and on the basis of an extension, you say the person must get 14 million. We say that existing notice at the time will then prevail in relation to determining the salaries of those senior managers. So yes, honorable member, they have within their own rights to extend because the law as it stands provides for that. There has been a discussion at NIMEC and also with provinces where it was agreed that when we amend, we need to do away with that section that deals with an extension. But that matter is in the pipeline. The issue relating to the forensic investigations, we have written letters to all provinces, and they have given us forensic investigations outcomes. We have realized that further investigations were done and municipalities were not implementing.
Sorry, Mr. Mekashupi, if you can be short in your answers, we now have time pressures. We need to be out of here by 1 o'clock and we still have to take 2 presentations. If we can be short and quick, please.
Okay. I will take 2 minutes. We are following on the forensic investigations. There is an answer that we have made, and we are also working with the law enforcement to deal with these matters, and there is a report with all the cases that have been reported and the status thereof. What committees? We are not waiting for 2019 to establish what committees. We are saying that we have established what committees, but we are seeing to it that by 2019 we have functional ward committees, and we also have all ward committees having ward-based plans in order to make them functional. So our target is that all of them, we are already at 99.1% of the establishment. The only outstanding one are the ones in Free State 1 and the Tshwane matter because of the court case that was there. So they are being established, but we look at functionality thereof. The database for this scenario, we have that. Lastly, on the Msundusi matter, we are aware of this particular case. We are working on it. And you are aware that the matter, the person was at Ekurhuleni, and he was also recommended in Ethekwini. But Ethekwini take into account that there was that case in Ekurhuleni, didn't appoint him. And you are aware of the fact that he was appointed in November in Sunusi, and you are working on it, and we are following the matter. The minister is highly involved in this particular matter. Thank you.
Tisho? Yeah, old friend from Bronco Street.
you put a very high expectation, Chairperson, and thank you for calling us honorable. Chair, the question is very simple. I hope the response will be honorable as well. The EPWP program for member or OnlyFund, honorable member OnlyFund. EPWP and CWP are sister programs. The difference, the big difference between the two programs is that ours in CWP is a revolving door program where those who are participating in the program are not employees in a project or in a contract. They are participants who can come and go as they wish, and they only do 2 days in a week. Whereas with EPWP, the Extended Public Works Program, they might be involved in a program or a project for 12 months, 18 months to 2 years, building a road. Whereas with us at CWP, we might be maintaining potholes, cutting the grass verges on a two-day basis. And our stipend is about 700 rand. It's a, what they call a poverty interrupting program. We interrupt poverty. We make sure that our participants are able to do other things. They are able to have other jobs. They are able to go and do harvesting in the harvesting area, but then still come back to the program. They are able to get training from us and exit the program if they wish to do so. So the big difference is basically that. And the answer is no, they do not qualify for the 3,500 minimum wage because they are not employees. I did not want to put it that simple. Thank you.
You ready with your presentation, Mr. Youssef Zvimbane? You can shoot, Chief. Honorable members, can I impress upon you on this one, on these two last presentations? I would want to allow Honorable Babela to respond on issues regarding traditional leadership, especially. It's very important, especially in as far as land issues are concerned. After these presentations, that we do not do questions because of the time factor. But members are always free to do written questions to the executive for written reply. Are we agreeing on that? Just on time factor, we're not trying to oppress you. Are we agreeing on that? Okay, thank you very much. over to you, Mr. Vimba. Am I pronouncing your surname correctly?
According to the program chair, the DG of Traditional Affairs will come to them myself.
Okay, you can shoot then, it's fine, either way.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. Deputy Ministers and colleagues. We are tabling this presentation on the annual performance plan and revised strategic plan of the Department of Traditional Affairs.
Sorry, at most 15 minutes now.
Okay, all right.
At most.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. So, I think if you look at the, I see the presentation, the laptop is not speaking to the part, to the projector, but I will use the slides that have been circulated. But in terms of the presentation, the issues that relate to vision, mission, I will not go through those. They have not changed. They have been shared with the committee before. Together with those areas that we talk about in terms of strategic overview on slide 6 and 7. Also, our values as a department have not changed, which is what is covered in slide 8. And our Deputy Minister Abella, has already spoken to the 5 key pillars that relate to the medium-term strategic framework priorities. So that as well, I will not repeat that area. The strategic outcome-oriented goals and strategic objectives, those key issues also, they remain firm on the agenda of the department around functional and accountable institutions of traditional leadership, community development-oriented and sustainable institution of traditional leadership, issues of cohesive traditional communities, as well as an internal focus on the department itself, making sure that it is more effective in performing this work. So the slides then that follow, they take those strategic goals, and then they relate them to the National Development Plan and the outcomes. So for the next 3 slides, slides 11, 12, and 13, they look at the specific chapters of the NDP and ask the question, how does the Department of Traditional Affairs respond to what is contained in Chapter 6 of the strategy of the NDP, what is contained in Chapter 13 of the NDP, as well as what is contained in Chapter 15 of the NDP. So this is just to explain the alignment between what we do, our strategic objectives, our goals, as well as the NDP and the outcomes approach of government. And again, then what happens here is to talk about the specific indicators and outputs where we take the goals that we have presented in the earlier slide and show how specifically we focus on the indicators per goal. So, for example, making sure that the houses of traditional leaders, the institutions of traditional leaders such as traditional councils, are able to perform all their legislated functions, and we look at the percentage of those annually to make sure that we impact on the functionality of those institutions. Also, the work that happens around the involvement of traditional leaders, the issue that was raised by Honorable Oliphant about involvement of traditional leaders at the municipal level. So that's one of the issues. So when we talk about the APP later, we'll just give specific concrete examples of what we are doing in that area as a department. And the one around the composition of traditional councils, where there is a target that there is a third of them will be women as members. We continue to monitor that area, and the area of assisting with the management of disputes, traditional leadership disputes, and also the area of deaths and injuries resulting from customary initiation. This one I've already spoken to. And so the part that deals with satisfaction surveys is just one of the ways in which we try to find out if there is satisfaction with the work that we do as the Department of Traditional Affairs and the services that we provide in support of provincial departments and so on. The last area here relates to national leadership capacity building, where we have a number of programs that we work with the partners such as the LG CETA, local government CETA, to assist with capacity building in institutions of traditional leadership such as traditional councils, and working with traditional councils around areas of socio-economic development as well as the projects that relate to culture and heritage promotion. Again, the APP speaks to those specific areas, and then the one that relates to an ongoing research agenda on traditional affairs issues, issues that relate to land, issues that relate to powers and functions, and so on. I've spoken to the issue of dealing with disputes, that is just converting all the goals that we have into the strategic objectives here, but now specifically to talk about the targets, the programs that we have three programs, but in the presentation, honorable members will see that we have also singled out the National House of Traditional Leaders. It's not really a fourth program, but just to profile the work that the National House of Traditional Leaders specifically does on an annual basis. The first program relates to administration. I won't spend a lot of time on this. This is just to focus on the internal functionality of the department to make sure that we continue to get the unqualified audits. The last 3 years we got unqualified, this last year we got clean, and this is just in our APP a focus on making sure that we continue to function effectively as a department, and that's what program administration does. One of the things we're doing here is we've got what is called an integrated governance and management plan, where we take all the issues raised by the Auditor General, raised by MPET, the DPME assessment frameworks, raised by internal audit, we put them in one plan with implementation activities and targets. It's just one of the tools that we use to improve the functionality of the department as part of program one. The second program is research policy and legislation. There we focus on the issue of leadership disputes on an ongoing basis. We work with our provincial counterparts to assist with the management of traditional leadership disputes where they arise. And then, of course, that issue that I raised around culture and heritage promotion. One of the issues that the Deputy Minister spoke to from the resolutions of the 2017 Traditional Leadership Endeavour was the involvement of traditional leaders with other partners to make sure that they address what was labeled harmful cultural practices. So as part of that work, the work that we are doing at the moment is creating partnerships not only with traditional leaders but with also departments such as arts and culture to make sure that we work together to address this particular areas. And in fact, one of the things that traditional leaders have also raised was that we want to, as custodians of culture, we want to be involved in cultural tourism. So one of the areas of work that we focus on is exactly in that area. Continuing with this area of research policy and legislation, assisting royal families, there is this very tricky work that focuses on issues of succession and so on. And there is work that the department is doing in this area to assist, because it's one of the ways in which we assist with dealing with avoiding disputes. And we give specifics here. We've got work that focuses on customary laws of succession, work that focuses on genealogies, and there's a number of books that we produce per kingship and queenship so that it guides, based on the research that has been done in a particular royal family, what the customary laws of succession
are. Are the books available for you to members?
Because of limited resources, we have not been able to print a lot of copies. And what we have been saying in the department is that we should...
You're not answering my question. We don't
have enough copies, Honorable Chair. We don't have enough, but the books are there. In fact, some of these have been launched publicly already, but to the extent possible, we can share, but a limited number, because we have not been able to print enough copies. What we have been saying internally is that perhaps we should also consider just putting them on the website so that they can be freely accessible on the website. This one relates to ongoing capacity building of institutions of traditional leadership. One of the things the department did previously was to assess the functionality of traditional councils. And emanating from that assessment, then they said to provinces, develop support plans so that you can then support the traditional councils in addressing those areas where the assessment reveals that there are weaknesses. So this is just the one part where we monitor and work with provinces on the implementation of those support plans. I've spoken to the issue of capacity building. as part of institutional support and coordination. We also promote partnerships between a number of entities and traditional communities. Just this last weekend, there was a launch in the Free State where World Vision had contributed a number of bicycles for farm schools as a partnership between World Vision, the National House of Traditional Leaders, ourselves, and the provincial administration. That's just one of the examples of partnerships that we promote with traditional communities. And then there's the issue again that was raised. Honorable Oliphant talked about how we ensure smooth relations between traditional leaders and councillors in the municipal space. So there are two ways of doing this. The one way, which is what we're reflecting here, is based on going into those municipal councils where traditional leaders are participating successfully. We said, let's pull together best practice guidelines. So we have best practice guidelines that we have developed that can then be utilized by other spaces as well to facilitate smooth relations between traditional leaders as well as councillors in the municipal space. But of course, the second area of doing that is to look into areas of legislation, and that's where we have engagement with our counterparts in SALGA as well as DCOC to see if there are areas in legislation that can be leveraged to strengthen the collaboration within the municipal space between traditional leaders as well as councillors. Socioeconomic development, a very key element of the resolutions from last year's Indaba, and one of the fundamental activities here, the Deputy Minister has talked about it, relates to the issue of agrarian revolution. The President spoke about this and said, if we are going to turn around the state of the economy in rural communities, agriculture is the way to go. So we have a very focused program at the moment. We have developed a concept. We have been engaging with the National House of Traditional Leaders. This past week we engaged with our MINMEC. We have engaged with the provincial heads of Department of Agriculture, provincial heads of Rural Development and Land Reform, and tomorrow we'll be engaging with heads of traditional affairs sections in provinces, because it's a full value chain program which looks at the identification of land, making sure that the land can be put to productive use for agricultural purposes, but bringing all these partners so that they can assist with training, making seeds available, providing advice on when it is the right time to plant which seed, all those kinds of things, dealing with harvesting seasons, making agricultural inputs such as tractors and so on and so on. I think it's one of those issues, Chairperson, as you say, that on its own will require a focused engagement with. But this is how we are taking forward the resolutions from the traditional leadership in Dawa. And then, of course, ongoing monitoring of the issue of initiation, cultural initiation, through the guidelines that have been put in place, as well as the monitoring plans that are there. Still with the National House of Traditional Leaders, there is a project that the House has identified around the issue of women empowerment. So where they're saying they're leading this process in traditional communities to have projects that specifically deal with the issue of women empowerment. That remains firmly on our APP so that we can work with the National House to deal with those issues. Finally, Chairperson, this is just our allocation. Mr. Faber has already spoken about the amount that you have. If you look at that slide, the 2018-19 base year allocation is 153 million, just over 153 million for the Department of Traditional Affairs. But just to indicate in that slide that there is an allocation that goes to the CRR Rights Commission, which is over about 42 million, just over 42 million, going up to 45 million in the second year and 47 million in the outer year. So out of the 153 million that we call our budget, 42 million of that is paid to the CRR Commission as transfer, as a transfer, and then the remainder is what we use for our programs. We show that allocation there in terms of program allocation, and then we show it also in terms of economic classification to show how much goes to what area of spending. And this is just a pie chart representation of the same amount And our recommendation is that the committee support the allocations that we have in our strategic plan in APP for 2018-2019. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, DG. Deputy Minister, so don't you think maybe it's pertinent on your part as a department to establish a special team of conflict resolution people? I'm saying this because of the fact that you are dealing with a lot of conflict issues, especially in municipalities. You find conflicts between the Troika on many municipalities, and you know, to be intervening and go, and after 3 months you come back and the same conflict is there. What about having a permanent team of people that will look at conflict management and resolution issues across the board, even on traditional leadership and so on and so on? I think we can respond to that later, but over to you, Mr. Zimba now.
Thank you very much. I will try to be very quick. As I present, I will also try to respond to some of the questions that were raised. This is our presentation outline. I'm not going to go through it. I take it as read. In terms of the vision and mission, again, I'm not going to go through it. It hasn't changed. On slide 3, our mandate is to render technical advice and support to municipalities, and we've got 5 broad functions. One, to support municipalities, to conduct infrastructure, effective infrastructure planning, and achieve sustainable service delivery, and support municipalities with the implementation of infrastructure projects, also support municipalities with the operation and maintenance of municipal infrastructure, and build the capacity of municipalities to undertake infrastructure planning, delivery, operations and maintenance, and perform any other function ancillary to the mandate. I'm not going to go through the organizational values. I will zoom in to our strategic goals and objectives and say we have 4 strategic outcome-oriented goals with a set of strategic objectives. I'll start with goal 1, refocus and strengthen the capacity of MISA to deliver on its mandate. There we have a set of strategic objectives, 3 of them, which is to improve the usefulness and reliability of performance information. Previously, AG had challenges with MISA as it relates to the usefulness of information that we have addressed. And in the last audit outcomes, we had issues only with regard to reliability, which we are dealing with, Chairperson. Also, to improve the effectiveness of internal controls, risk management, and governance structures, and provide effective and efficient corporate governance, financial, and legal support services to MISA. The goal 2 is to ensure significant improvement in service delivery through sound infrastructure management. This is our core program, Chem. There, our strategic objective is to more effective support and intervention with greater impact on citizens' lives. It also wants to ensure that there is improved technical capacity and enhanced technical skills in municipalities. Our goal 3, improving technical capabilities in 25 municipalities for effective, efficient and delivery and management of municipal infrastructure. There we have got 2 strategic objectives, which is to increase the number of skilled technical professionals and artisans in identified municipalities, to coordinate and ensure the implementation of a strategic approach to the development of technical capacity in the sector. Last goal, which is to ensure sustainable improvement in municipal infrastructure delivery through the infrastructure procurement, financing, contract management, and development of institutional capacity of municipalities to procure and contract manage infrastructure projects. There have got 2 strategic objectives, which is to provide infrastructure planning, procurement and contract management capacity, and services to identified municipalities. The second one is to facilitate effective and efficient municipal infrastructure procurement. On this, you see that we are trying to address a number of challenges in municipalities, in particular as it relates to issues around supply chain, which has got an impact general delivery of projects. And we have taken a decision to say, over and above supporting municipalities with technical support, we need to also support them with infrastructure procurement issues. Part B says our programs and sub-programs. Our strategic objective one is to improve the usefulness and reliability of performance. Our perfect indicator there is to ensure that our strategic plan and annual government plan complied and is approved by the executive authority and submitted with the national sales are on time. There we want to have a compliant 2019-2018. Also the second indicator, number of performance reports produced in terms of national solar guidelines and time frames and approved by the accounting officer and executive authority. They want to ensure that we have got an approved performance report per year, got four quarterly performance reports, one performance information report, and one annual report. The third one to the development and implementation of ICT operational plan. Want to have an approved ICT operational plan implemented in 2018-19. On the second strategic objective, which is to improve the effectiveness of the internal controls and risk management and governance structures, our indicator there is approved risk register. The risk register must be updated and approved by accounting officer by 31 March each year is our target for 2018-19. The number of risk monitoring reports submitted and approved by the audit committee. We'll have four risk monitoring reports per financial year, a three-year rolling strategic internal audit plan and annual coverage plan submitted and approved by the audit committee. We'll have three-year rolling strategic internal audit plan and annual coverage plan approved by the audit committee by 30 June of each year. Also, the number of progress reports against annual audit coverage plan submitted to the audit committee. We have four internal audit reports produced and submitted to the committee per financial year. On the third strategic objective, which is to provide effective and efficient corporate financial and legal support services for MISA, there we have two performance indicators, percentage of performance agreements and or assessments concluded on time in compliance with the TMTS policy, we want to achieve 95% submission of general performance agreements. And as well as our assessments on by due date. Percentage of legal opinions and or contracts or policy reviews provided within 15-day working days in cases not requiring external expertise. There we are seeing 100% of all routine internal requests for legal opinions. Percentage of adjusted budget. This is our test strategic objective to provide effective and efficient corporate finance and legal. There we have got percentage of adjusted budget spent by the end of the financial year. Our target is to spend at least 98% by year-end. And unqualified audit opinion on the annual financial statements. We want to maintain our unqualified audit opinion by the end of this financial year. Also in terms of the approved procurement plan, we want to ensure that our procurement plan is approved and submitted by 31 March each year. And also report on quarterly verifications of assets, asset register verified quarterly in each financial year. Coming to the core program, Chair, one, we want to provide effective support and intervention with greater impact on citizens' lives. The number of infrastructure assessments on water and wastewater treatment plants conducted. We plan to conduct one, Chair. I'm sure there will be a question, why only one? And I think we'll answer that, Chair. It's a very broad and a detailed assessment which we'll be conducting in the Free State. And also given the budgetary limits, we plan to have one. A number of district basic service delivery backlog assessments conducted. This is a continuation of the previous indicators, Chair, in this financial year. We have five, we have done 10 already. A number of municipal technical support plans developed and implemented. We have a target of supporting 81 municipalities in our APPs, Chair, this year. So we'll sign technical support plans with those 81 municipalities as well as memorandum of agreements with those municipalities. These municipalities, Chair, are part of the municipalities that were pronounced by the Minister. in the program of intervention where we said we're going to support 55 municipalities who are struggling with issues of technical capacity. And these are part of municipalities that are classified as distressed, and we have a list of 87 of those prioritized municipalities which will be jointly supported between MISA, National Treasury, as well as the COPCHAP B2B. So we have targeted 81 of them, but we have 55 where we'll be specifically focusing on the issue of building technical capacity through the deployment of district support teams comprising of engineers, the project and construction managers, the issue of the GIS specialists, financial and governance specialists in the 55. But in total of 81, that others we are continuing to support on various programs that WIMESA is running. And the number of infrastructure sector plans developed, we have plans to support municipalities. These are infrastructure master plans, honorable members. We have planned to support 8 municipalities this financial year. Last year we have supported, I think, about 15 of them with infrastructure master plans. Here, MISA is funding these infrastructure master plans. And the number of town and regional planning sector plans developed, here these are special development frameworks. We have planned to support 2. Makana is one of the municipalities that will be supporting with the SDF. And the number of water conservation and demand management strategies developed, we plan to do 10 this financial year. A number of municipalities supported through the MISA regional management support program. This is a program that we started implementing in 2016 in Sekukune, Oartambo, and Amatole. We are jointly implementing this program with National Treasury. The Treasury gave us 80 million rand to pilot a program where we focus on the whole institution instead of just focusing on the technical area. Because we have realized that the challenge in these municipalities, if you just focus on the technical side and you leave the finance and the governance areas, you are not going to make an impact. So we came up with what we call a management support program, which is an institutional turnaround program where we have deployed experts in engineering, in particular water, experts in infrastructure procurement, experts in financing, infrastructure financing, human resource experts, chartered accountants who have got experience in local government. They have been deployed in Amatole. They are currently working there since 2016-17 financial year, and also in Skukune as well as in Oartambo. Another program on the technical skills increased the number of skilled technical professionals and artisans identified municipalities. Here was a number of apprentices enrolled in the MISA Artisan Development Program. We have a target of 230 apprentices that will be enrolled in our program. These are artisans that we are training towards qualification as artisans. We are using Amachuba and Gusela College as well as AA to assist in the development of these artisans. A number of learners enrolled in the MISA Experiential Learnership Program, we've got 100 this financial year. And the number of graduates enrolled in the MISA Young Graduate Program is another important program towards professionalization of local government. In the report that we have presented to the President, we indicated the challenge around engineering capacity in municipalities. The fact that we've got a reduced number of qualified engineers, I think you spoke to that matter, we've got 55. In fact, the 55 municipalities that have got engineers with degrees, but we've got 202 municipalities without engineers with degrees. But some municipalities will have engineers who are having diplomas in civil engineering and so forth and so forth. So it's a challenge that we are addressing through the Young Graduate Program, which we plan to create a skills pipeline towards professionalizing of local government. So these young graduates, will support them with mentors who are mentoring them towards registration as professional engineers as well as and others as professional planners. number of municipal officials provided the technical skill training. Again, we have 500 of municipal officials that were providing the technical skills around contract management, around project management, and the number of technical skills training program that we have. A number of students provided repositories for studies in technical professions. We have 150 in this financial year. A number of municipal general workers, what we call Section 28 apprentices in the Ministry, Artisan Recognition of Prior Learning Program, were 15. Here, these are officials who have been in these municipalities for years, who have gained experience, but they are not qualified. So we said, let's assist them through what we call a prior learning program towards a qualification as an artisan. So we have got a target of 50 this financial year. This part and parcel of building capacity in this municipality. And another program, number of approved capacity development framework. What we've discovered here, we've got a number of capacity development programs from various institutions. We said with regard to technical capacity, let's have one capacity development framework that will develop in the country, that whoever is a stakeholder wants to come with a capacity development program will work within the confines of this framework. So we're doing this in partnership with HGCETA and other stakeholders. And a number of municipal capacity development plans developed and implemented. Here we have a target of 7 municipalities where we want to assist these municipalities to have their own capacity development plan. Whoever comes...
Mr. Wimber, can you summarize, please? I'm afraid we...
I'm almost there, Chair. Then the number one, number of municipalities about to implement the IGMS, we're working with Treasurer on this one, the target of 3. And the number of feasibility studies conducted to address misalignment of bulk and reticulation is a very important program, Chair, where we've discovered that about 18 water service authorities in the country have got bulk infrastructure that was constructed years ago, but has not been utilized because of lack of plans for reticulation. We said we need to address this issue, so we're building the feasibility studies to address the misalignment of bulk. And the issue of number of framework contracts for municipal infrastructure goods and services, again, we're addressing the challenges here around the issue of procurement in municipalities. We want to come up with a set of framework contracts where municipalities will place orders against. Coming to our finances, Chair, Acting DG spoke to the allocation to MISA. We have 342 this financial year, and out of it, 262 goes to our main core program, and 12 million go to the other sub program that is still developing, and 67 million goes to our administration. This is the proportional division in terms of our location. 76% goes to our core program, the technical support, and 20% administration, and 4% to the new program that is still developing. In conclusion, Chair, we're saying the 2018 annual performance plan for MISA is aligned with the new organizational structure. Previously, Chair, you had raised concern about MISA using a lot of consultants in their program. Now we have got a new approved organizational structure now where we have built capacity in terms of engineers. We've got 50 engineers in our approved structure, 15 town planners, 15 electrical engineers, as well as other key disciplines. So I'm not going to go through them. The implementation of this structure will enable MISA to start employing technical professionals on a permanent basis, and functions to be performed under Program 3 will be expanded progressively as capacity within the program is created. The municipal technical capacity intervention, which has been initiated, wherein digital support teams will be established to strengthen the capacity of different municipalities with engineering expertise. I spoke to this one, Chairperson. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Zumba. The Mbapela?
No, thank you very much. There was a few questions. I hope the presentation did answer to some, but just some one or two emphasis. The relationship of traditional leadership and municipalities, it's impacted upon by three major areas. One is the structural issue. And the second one, it's
the role and functions and the powers thereof between councils and the regional leadership. There seems to be a conflict in terms of the roles, functions, and then the powers. And then thirdly, it will be more around personalities, where you find that roles, functions are clear, the structure is clear, but then there will then be egos and personalities then that arises based off individuals. So now, in engaging on the issue, SALGA has come up with some kind of a issue that they think is a group of issues that needs to be helping the traditional leaders in smoothing and harmonizing the relationship. They've engaged with the National House of Traditional Leaders. In majority, they are sort of agreeing to them. But also the Municipal Structures Act needs to be amended, Section 81 also, to then incorporate those issues into the Act, because of this personality, sometimes the Speaker will then disregard whatever SALGA has proposed as a form of relationships because it's not in the law. And then the Speaker will say, but I'm governed by an Act called Municipal Structures Act, and therefore you can't tell me anything. So then those issues we then have to look as to whether the amendment of that Section 81 of the Municipal Structures Act to effect what has been agreed to empower both the speakers, the municipalities, and the traditional leaders participating so that there could be that particular harmonious relations that then can then be achieved. So I think those are the issues that we're now looking at, and as soon as we are ready, we'll then begin to look at those issues. Even though traditional leaders are sort of now saying, let's review Chapter 7 of local government, let's review Chapter 12 of traditional leaders as in the Constitution. We are not yet there, but they've highlighted these issues for engagement, discussion, and then to reach consensus, because they want really to go into the power function of the traditional leaders to say these are not there, and therefore they will want us to engage on those issues. And that is part of how we can settle the sector in a democratic dispensation going forward. The second issue was the issue around the spluma. Fortunately, then at the Indaba, we were able to resolve that those areas that they have difficulties with, can they indicate them? They've identified three or four of them. We are now looking at them in the interministerial committee, which is the Department of Performance Planning and Monitoring, COPTA, and the Department of Rural Development and Land Affairs, to then begin to look at whether they go for an amendment of that particular legislation to then begin to bring in that harmonization in dealing with those issues that have been identified. And they are insisting that these issues ought to be, or otherwise the tensions between municipalities and them will always arise if land has to be utilized, to say, don't even tell me about spluma here until those issues are addressed. And therefore, the process is moving a bit slow, but obviously there's agency on the side that all parties must really find each other. Because they were calling for the repeal completely of the whole legislation, we were able to persuade them that repeal is not the option, but amendment is the way to go. And then they are sort of saying, okay, let's see, because we don't trust you as government, you will say this and never do it. So we have to really make sure that so that we move once there's an agreement around those issues for amendments, once we have reached that particular agreement. On the issues of the involvement of the traditional leaders, as raised by Honorable Oliphant, and on the IDPs, and also the plans, Rose Bloomer, plus the integrated urban development are going to be the two planning instruments that will have to factor in ensuring proper settlement and in dealing with the apartheid special planning that is in place, and then build a new South Africa on. Once spluma has been resolved, then an IUDF has been trained on traditional leaders so that they know that certain urban nodes are beginning to develop. I mean, you go to Jenfest or you go to Bushbuck Ridge. So those are now becoming fast urban nodes in the rural area. And then how then do we deal with the role of traditional leaders in an urbanizing node, you know, that is taking place even within the rural setting itself? So we then said that both instruments are going to be key and fundamental for traditional leaders to be trained on, to understand them, the communities to know and understand them, so that we have one seamless planning
that then run across the land, but also the IDPs. How does the municipality take into cognizance the two instruments, PLUMA and the IUDF, as they consult and then they engage communities, including going specifically to traditional leaders and also community leaders within those traditional, so that then the element of consultation is as effective, so that then this tension then goes out, because whatever planning that takes place, there will have been this particular overall plan. And then the last is around the issues of the bills, that there's confusion, as Honorable Cheto was saying. The TLGFA amendment, which basically saying give us an extension so that we are able then to spend money on the traditional council, because currently the old act is not giving us space to continue spending money there. And the Auditor General has raised issues to say we are spending money on an illegal structure, because in terms of the law, that this law that we are applying is no longer as effective, because it has, some of them have expired. Now, because of the processes of the TKLB was very slow, and we thought by this time, Ulona, then it has impacted now on us having to request an extension on this one, because we introduced the bill in 2014 to Parliament, and then the NA sat with that bill until last year, 2017, and then it's now with you, it's now 2018, we don't know when it's going to pass. And that is why we then brought this last year to say, while Parliament is still processing this bill, and as to whether the President will assent to it, we don't know when, whether there might be constitutional issues and it goes to the Constitutional Court, we don't know. Therefore, give us a legal standing on the instituting of the traditional councils, so that when we spend money on them, we don't have auditing issues arising from the Auditor General, and therefore are not found wanting, and we do not want to affect the good clean audits of the department. All right. The issue of the dispute of traditional leaders, I mean, the systems are there, the rules are there. We even have an institution in the department to deal with them. But it will be family disputes that divide communities, one. But also there will be communities that dispute the royal leader that is there, number one. So they become complex in the environment that the department will then have to help. But until the groups themselves, you know, are able to learn, then the relationship between municipalities and the traditional leaders themselves, either at the level of municipalities, those are easy to engage, because then we'll be able to look at the mandate and then say, but you're out of your mandate, you need to really work together. And then the troikas, I mean, the troikas, it's a combination of issues there. Personalities could also arise between the mayor and the speaker and the chief whip, they don't speak to each other. Or politics can also enter that space, as is the case in many municipalities. But we do have training models, we do have monitoring aspects of it. There are rules that govern as to which role which one plays. But you'll find that, unfortunately, the egos and then also politics entering, and then therefore straining the relationship, and then municipal managers becoming casualties, or other senior members becoming casualties in that environment, and municipalities no longer performing. But there are teams in the DCOG. The municipal support team is there to ensure, therefore, that there's very good functioning municipalities across the country. But within MISA also, they also have systems and teams that also work together to ensure, therefore, that there's a smoothing of the relationships on the service delivery side, infrastructure challenges and so forth. But politics and egos will come in and dominate the space from time to time. Thank you.
Thanks, DM. Thank you very much for sharing the information with us. You will agree with me that even the historical wars, ethnic wars, were fought around a dispute of two persons,
yeah.
Some of them.
Yeah.
So I think mediation, dispute management, and conflict resolution is very key in that particular space. We really not have to casualize it. We really need to put more effort on it in terms of our programs. The Deputy Ministers, I'm not sure how far do you go in terms of making municipalities share good practices around issues of Section 154 and Section 139, where they have been successful. We had a presentation from the Free State in the previous 2 weeks, a very good example of intervention that has worked very well. So that we do not have a repeat of Section 139 in one municipality many times, it suggests to me that it perhaps did not help the first time it was invoked. And also the local government week has been vocal around that issue. DMNL, you'll agree with me. The second issue that I want to raise as I conclude, the honourable members, is the issue of the local economic development in the local government space. From where I'm sitting, my observation tells me that it's more of secondary issue than it is the issue. My observation and my reading of the economies of the world, especially the developing countries, the economy of any developing country is always piggybacking on small business. We can't be looking at these big issues all the time, and at the same time we say we want to grow. I think this is the space local government must play a bigger role in terms of stimulating small business growth as we contribute towards a reduction or eradication of unemployment that is confronting us as a country. The last issue is the sharing of information, DM. I want to think that you agree with us that it's not only during the time you come to appear before us that you have to share information with us. I think whatever information in terms of your internal reports, your book, DG, I'm very much interested in my own tribal authority as to what actually the history is that one. If you can make it available to us, if you can put it online, it's even more advantageous for us to access it as members of this committee. The report on the last point is the report on the local government week that has been adopted by the House. Honorable DM Nelly, you've been there yourself. We will be holding you accountable on the issues recommended by that one. Please take serious consideration. So I think we have exhausted the business of this day. I would love to adjourn the meeting at this point. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you.